You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Now it's time to hear from the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez March.
It was just 2 weeks ago, following weather warnings and torrential rain, that flooding and slips across Northland, Coromandel and the Bay of Plenty wreaked havoc, cutting off communities, damaging houses and taking at least 9 lives. Since the disaster, the Green Party has been advocating for the activation of the Civil Defence Payment, a fund put aside to provide a modicum of support to get people back on their feet. Last week, the government announced its activation. And the quality of our lives, the affordability of our food, the pay of our jobs, and the success of our enterprises and arts, all summed up in the words state of the economy. In the run-up to the election, where Kiwis will get to their say on if we feel the current government has been good kaitiaki of our economy or not, the measures of its success are becoming increasingly fought over. What measures are thought to be important may well impact who gets to govern us for the next 3 years. And finally, this Friday, we celebrate the 186 years since the signing of Te Tiriti o Waitangi, or the Treaty of Waitangi, in 1840, that laid the foundation for the creation of the New Zealand state today. For our weekly catch-up with the Green Party, I spoke with MP Ricardo Menendez March about the state of the economy and how we commemorate Waitangi Day, but began by asking him about the government's activation of the civil defence payment that he had advocated for. Hello, Ricardo.
Kia ora, thank you for having me.
I want to start us off today by talking about something we talked about last time, which was the Civil Defence Fund. You advocated for its use after the flooding, and I wanted to first hear about what it would do for people.
Yeah, so we came out and asked the government to put in place a civil defence payment, which is a payment available through the Ministry of Social Development so that people can recover lost clothing, kai, bedding, or lost income due to not being able to work, or, for example, the cost of temporary accommodation. It's just one tool in the toolkit that we thought should have been deployed from the get-go. We're really happy that it now has been deployed, and we've been trying to ensure that people are aware that it's out there and that they can simply, if they Google civil defense payment, call the 0800 number and request it if they were affected by the extreme weather events. And now we're calling it for it to be increased because it hasn't been in over 13 years.
That was going to be my next question, in fact. Is it enough? And if it's not enough, maybe you can tell us why.
So the civil defense payment amounts haven't kept up with inflation. The last time it was updated, it was in 2013. And so as we know, the cost of food, bedding, clothing, rent have all increased in the past decade or so, but that payment hasn't. If you're someone who lost everything, for example, right now you can only access $400 to recover basically all your bedding, clothing, and kai as a single person. We don't think that is good enough. And I know this firsthand because in the Auckland floods of 2023, when I was helping families access that payment, I could see that if you're a family that lost literally everything, you need far more to be able to get your life back in order. And so this is why we think the government should update this payment. It's not a payment that is used very often, and this is why we think it's something that the government could easily do to just simply ensure that families are adequately supported when disaster strikes.
Are you worried at all that climate change is going to be increasing the costs of funds such as this, and that our ability to fund them might eventually become eroded if we don't put in place new structures?
So climate change will indeed accelerate and intensify these extreme weather events, but I think what the government needs to do is not just increase the civil defense payment, because ultimately that's not necessarily the more structural work that needs to happen for us to adapt to a changing climate, but also to prevent climate change from getting worse, which is why we've long called for the government to also put in place things like funds to make sure that we're building with nature as opposed to against it, so that we build cities and towns that can sponge up flooding events when they happen, so that then families don't have to lose their belongings in the first place, but also that we do enough to transition to a clean economy that allows people to have what they need to thrive. So, for example, investing in things like rail so that we can reduce our transport emissions and people can have access to fast, free and reliable public transport.
Okay, I want to pivot now into our next topic, which is going to be the economy. There has been lots of talk about the economy, lots of people considering it very important potentially for the outcome of this coming election. The National Party has talked about green shoots in the economy, that things are starting to recover, bounce back, do better. Do you agree?
The government is largely relying on house prices shooting back up in order for the so-called GDP to move up as well. But I think when we talk about the economy, we're talking about people. And what we're seeing on the streets, it's homelessness being on the rise, people finding themselves without jobs and struggling to get into entry-level jobs particularly. And for us, that's why our focus of our economic plan is to ensure that we focus on creating jobs. We've already produced some documents around what we would intend to do, which would include creating tens of thousands of jobs in the construction and manufacturing sector particularly, so that we can, for example, stop exporting raw construction materials to then only import them back far more expensive once they've been processed offshore. We think we can build that capacity here and diversify our economy so that it's not so reliant on dairy and tourism and expensive house prices in order for these green shoots to appear.
What would you say to government spokespeople that would point towards businesses that might be kept afloat through reliance on personal mortgages or things such as that, which might become more sustainable in the current environment?
Well, that ultimately the government is relying on the market fixing itself. And we know that ultimately, when the government talks about the economy recovering, they're often talking about GDP figures, right? And that is simply just a measure of how much money is moving around the economy. It's not a measure necessarily of whether people have enough to eat, whether people actually have good enough jobs. And so I think the government is simply relying on the same system that has brought us inequality, that has brought us economic hardship. And when it comes to the mortgages and how the government hopes that the economy is kept afloat, a lot of it relies on people getting into personal debt in order to make ends meet and or to, for example, being able to finance entering a business. And we don't think that's necessarily a sustainable way of doing things.
And with those policies around focusing on job creation and moving away from those dominant industries such as dairy and tourism, could you maybe give us a bit of an outline of those policies, how they might look?
Well, so one of the things that we want to do in the construction sector is make sure that we're able to build public housing at scale, that we actually are able to have a green ministry of work that is able to plan and support the creation of the workforce that will allow us to build tens of thousands of public housing. This is housing that will be far cheaper than the current private housing available for rents, and we hope that it is available to a greater proportion of people. But then when it comes to manufacturing, we've long called now for us to be able to process wood onshore. So we think that we're able to invest in the manufacturing sector in order for us to not have to, like I mentioned, export wood only to be processed offshore and then being reinvested here, being imported here. We think this will drive down the cost of construction materials and will allow us to actually have a far more resilient economy as well. So these are two examples of it, but we also think that investing in renewables is another area that will yield lower energy prices and will also ensure that we're able to, as well, diversify the economy that we have. These are all plans that we'll talk more in the election year and we'll expand on what we created in the Green budget last year as well.
The Green Party is oftentimes characterized by its opponents as one that is anti-worker in the employment sense, in the taxing the utes or such. Do you feel that these policies help change that narrative?
Well, we've long supported better rights for workers. And when it comes to, I guess, some of the characterizations by the likes of New Zealand First, we've often actually called for us to have a more resilient and sovereign economy that is not so reliant on the US, that is not so reliant on big corporations that are coming from offshore. And one of the key things that we've called for when it comes to tax reform is to make sure that we have a tax-free threshold for everyday workers, because at the moment we tax work a lot, but we don't tax wealth enough. And so the rich are able to actually put their wealth in things like property, while everyday people end up getting taxed quite a bit when it comes to their everyday earnings. And we think that we need to rebalance the tax system so that actually it benefits everyday workers, and then the wealthy few actually end up paying their fair share. So we're quite happy to debate our opponents when it comes to those proposals and stereotypes that they wish to put forward. And we're ready for that fight come election year.
All right. Now I want to move on to our final topic. 186 years ago, the Treaty of Waitangi, or Te Tiriti o Waitangi, was signed. And as we move in to Waitangi Day this coming Friday, I would like to know your thoughts, your hopes, your dreams.
Yeah, so I think when it comes to Waitangi Day and Te Tiriti, what I think Te Tiriti can bring all of us, and I say this as somebody who is a migrant to Aotearoa, is unity. It's a sense of identity and a sense of belonging. Te Tiriti is in some ways our first formal immigration document. And I think for too long, we have had people painting Te Tiriti as something that threatens the livelihoods of non-Māori. But really, what it does, it grants us as our founding document. And it also guarantees us rights and the promise that we will all be looked after, while at the same time acknowledging that Māori have kaitiaki rights over this whenua and that sovereignty was never ceded. And so if anything, I hope that we can move to a place where we see Te Tiriti as something that can bring us together as opposed to something that supposedly threatens everyday people's rights to just have a good life, access to healthcare, education, and good jobs.
Waitangi Day has oftentimes been a moment of protest or activism. Do you feel that this current moment is one that needs speaking to?
Well, look, we've seen protest and resistance against the government's attacks on Te Tiriti outside of Waitangi Day already, and I don't expect that this Waitangi Day will be any different. But I think all these activations come from a place of people being extremely concerned about the fact that this government seems fixated on attacking the rights of Māori, when actually their focus should be on ensuring that people have access to a decent job, that they have access to good education, healthcare, and that we honour the founding document that promised all of us to be well looked after. And so I expect that there will be activations and that the Crown will be rightfully held accountable for their ongoing breaches of Te Tiriti, and that this government needs to front up to the fact that whether it's the Regulatory Standards Act or, for example, the Treaty Principles Bill that was initially proposed in this term, or the RMA reforms that bypassed iwi and hapu voices, all those things, I think that the government will be held to account in Waitangi Day, no doubt, and rightfully so, as it should be.
And finally, how will you be spending your Waitangi Day, Rogato?
I will be in Tamaki Makaurau, and I'll be at Waitangi at Waititi with my Green Party colleagues, and some of us will stay in Waitangi to at the dawn ceremony as well.
All right. Thank you very, very much. Have a fantastic Waitangi Day.
And likewise. Thank you.
Wish you all the best.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Ka kite. Bye.
That was the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez March on the civil defence payment for disaster victims, the state of the economy, and Waitangi Day.
That was the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez March.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.